Hi, how's it going? My name is Connor Gilson, and this is episode 22 of my podcast. Still in the subject of happiness. Happiness is good. Actually, pretty happy today. I took off last night from doing the podcast because, to be honest, I was slacking. I was watching poker videos because it's something I want to start doing, start playing, because it's a good game and I like the psychology aspect of it. But tonight I am back and I was sitting down to type out the notes for this and I was like, oh, I already did this because I forgot that I had put a bunch into the notes as of a couple nights ago and we didn't get to get to the second part, which was good because I got to slow down and break down the whole concept of Zoro's Circle. If you haven't listened to that podcast, definitely listen to that one. I see a few people like skipping around the podcast, which is, I guess, okay. I don't know. I mean, the reason I have this structure is so that you can like learn, and I wouldn't teach things unless you actually need to learn them or I think people need to learn them. But I guess it's a free world, so you can do whatever you want. But I do recommend you guys listen to these in sequence, especially if you're listening parts of certain of segments. It'd be good to listen to them in order, but hey, whatever. But tonight we're still talking about happiness. Tonight we're going to talk about habits. It's kind of interesting because we all know that we have habits and that they're, something important to us and they keep us easily doing certain things without us having to constantly think about it. But we're going to get into it and get a whole new like kind of viewpoint on habits and how they affect us and all that other good stuff. It's funny because there was a psychologist who talked about how, on a biological level, humans are very prone to habit. And that's because we're basically made of bundles of habits. That's what we are. We're just a bundle of habits. Like a bundle of sticks, but more habity. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like that's what makes us able to actually like perform throughout the day because it automatically helps us to perform many of our daily tasks, right? So like brushing our teeth first thing in the morning, not always good at that one. To setting the alarm before climbing into bed at night. These are habits that we have. We don't I don't It's funny because there's things that we do and we're like, "Ugh, I gotta do this, blah blah blah." But habits, we don't really do that, right? We don't like, unless they're like maybe like something like brushing your teeth and you're like drunk at night and whatever, and you're like, oh, I don't want to brush my teeth, I want to go to bed, things like that, or you're really tired, had a long day, things like that. But I've never ever set an alarm clock or knew I was going to set an alarm clock and be like, oh my goodness, like, why do I have to set this? I've been upset about having to wake up early or whatever, but I've never been upset about the aspect of having to set an alarm. Or of the action of setting alarm, because it's just habit, right? It's just part of who we are. And that's the thing, we rarely stop to think about the enormous role that they play in shaping our behavior and our lives. I mean, after all, if we had to make a conscious choice about every little thing we did all day, we would likely be overwhelmed because, like I talked about before, about how our mind works and how it can be overwhelmed if we're focusing on too many things at once. If we didn't have these habits or automations or autopilots, we would probably be overwhelmed by like breakfast time, right? So, let's put it this way. I don't think anybody here woke up this morning and then walked into the bathroom and looked into the mirror and think to themselves, should I put on clothes today? You didn't have to debate the pros and cons of why you should put clothes on. You didn't have to call on your reserves of willpower. You didn't have to call somebody to give you motivation to do it. You just did it, right? And the same thing like with how you combed your hair, drank your coffee, and you locked your front door when you left. It's actually when I was writing that, it popped into my head. It's actually a kind of funny story. I when my ex had moved out, she had a bunch of items here that she left. And she told me to leave the door open so she'd come in and get them. So I, knowing me, because I'm very habitable, I walked out and before he was leaving the line, I'm like, oh, leave the door unlocked, leave the door unlocked, leave the door unlocked, and I left. And this is a true story. This is why I love this. And I forgot something in the house, and I brought my phone in. I was getting water because I was going to go somewhere. I think it was like either a workout or something. I don't know, but I was gonna get water. So I came in, got my water, and then went out to the car. And the whole entire time, don't lock the door, don't lock the door, don't lock the door. Got to the car, realized that I left my phone in the house when I got my water. Came back, and this is what happens when I'm in a rush. I came back, picked up my phone, and put the water down to check something in the house. And the whole entire time, walked out the door, don't lock the door, don't lock the door, don't lock the door. Got in my car, realized I had dropped, left the water bottle. No, I left my keys. That's right. I left my keys in the house because it was disrupting my thought process by saying don't lock the. So I, my mind said, okay, you don't need the keys. But I didn't have the key for my car, so I came back in and I grabbed the keys and I grabbed my water and I had my phone, I had everything and I left. I drove away and about 45 minutes later, my ex texts me and says, you locked the door. And I'm like, what? No, I didn't. And in fact, I had. She drove all the way from Providence, which is like about an hour away, to come. And everything was locked. So things like that, habits, right? No matter how many times I told myself not to lock the door, just because I went in and out so many times, I ended up locking the door, and boom, and then I had to explain to her that I didn't do it on purpose, because it sure as heck seemed like that, because I locked the door. Lucky enough, she knew how bad I am at not doing things habitably. Like driving to stores, and like there's many times where somebody's like, okay, we have to stop here, and I'll just keep like, I'll be like, yeah, no problem, and then I'll just drive and then go into autopilot and drive home. They'll be like, dude, we had to go to the store. Be like, yeah, yep, sorry, bad. But that's the thing, right? You didn't have to remind yourself that you need clothes. It wasn't a struggle. It didn't deplete your reserves of energy or brain power. It's just second nature. It's automatic. It's autopilot, right? So, but that's what it is. Within our brains, there's billions upon billions of neurons, right? Interconnected in pretty much every possible way to form these complex set of neural pathways, right? Which is basically runways for electrical currents to travel down these from neuron to neuron, and it just, delivers all the messages that make up our pretty much every single thought, every single action, every single everything, right? And the thing is, the more we perform a particular action, the more connections form between the corresponding neurons. So this is why there's a saying, cells that fire together wire together. The stronger the link is, the faster the message can travel down the pathway. That's what makes our behavior seem second nature automatic, because there's no resistance inside of our brain. It just happens automatically. And habits take on average to form about 3 weeks. So that's why, like, first 3 weeks, if you want to go to the gym, it's like, but then after the 3 week mark, you're just used to it. It just happens. It's just part of your, procedure. So, and here's the thing. Here's the big thing. I always do better when I write my notes and then go directly into the podcast because it's all in my head, but now I'm like reading everything over a little too much. But the thing is, when we try to get a new habit, the problem is we rely on willpower. And whether it's, strict diet, New Year's resolution, playing guitar, learning to play guitar, if you're trying to rely on willpower, you can't. It's not going to last, okay? We think that we can go from 0 to 60 in an instant, changing or uprooting ingrained life habits just through the sheer force of will, which is never going to happen. It might happen for a little bit, but in most cases, you fall apart and things like that. So that's the thing, okay? One of the things that I did when I was learning guitar is I had my guitar in a case and I had it in the closet, okay? When I would learn to play, when I first started to learn to play, I had the motivation. I'd grab it out of the closet. I would play, but then after a while, I started getting, I didn't want to do it as much. And the act of going into my closet and pulling the guitar out and opening the case and things like that became too demanding of my time for me to do. So what I did is I actually got a guitar stand, and I put it in the middle of my room with my guitar out of the case, not in the closet. And I put it in the middle of my room, so it's just always there. It's within 20 seconds, I can grab it. So what happened was, it's much easier for me to get it to play it. So there wasn't this giant demand on my time or my mental thought to grab it out of the closet and all that stuff like that. It was just there. It's always there. It's just boom there. It's not out of sight, out of mind. But also, the more bigger thing is, it was always there to grab. So if I did get the urge, like, oh, I should probably practice today, boom, it was there. Okay, there's no excuse. It's right there out in the open. So that's what's gonna work and help you, right? And it's funny, when certain things happen in our lives, it can affect our habits or it can affect our mental state. There was a study where there were three groups of people. Group one was given a plate of chocolate chip cookies, which they were told not to eat, as well as a healthy plate of radishes, which they were welcome to eat to their heart's content. Group number two was presented with the same two plates of cookies and radishes, but they were told they could eat off whichever plate they liked. Group three was given no food at all. After enduring these situations for a significant length of time, the three groups were then given a set of simple geometric puzzles to solve. Note the quotes around simple. Okay. So, I'm doing them with my hand. But in truth, I guess they were the psychology's unsolvable puzzle. So there was no way to really kind of figure them out. But in the case, in any case, in the groups, the individuals in group two and three, the ones that weren't told not to eat the cookies, long outlasted group one, who quickly threw up their hands in defeat. So group two and three, one that had the one group one had the chocolate chip cookies and the radishes, and just the simple act of telling them do not eat the chocolate chip cookies ended up making their attention span and their patience way, way shorter than group two, which had the same plates but weren't told to not eat them, and then group three, which didn't have anything to eat for this really long time, okay? And the reason why is because the students in group one, who had to use every ounce of their willpower to avoid the enticing chocolate chip cookies, didn't have the willpower or mental energy left when it came to the complex puzzle. So that's what's interesting. And the funny thing is, avoiding the cookies and then persisting on a puzzle are two simply completely unrelated things, right? But having to no, then that's what caused the problem. So now think about how many times you do that in your life. How many times, whether you're doing a diet or whether you're going to the gym or things like that, it takes all that willpower to force a new change. But it will start taking away from other aspects of our lives. It's interesting because that's always been something I taught, that if you want to do something, you're going to want to do it bad enough and then make a promise and commitment and goal to yourself to do it, because there are all these different things that are against you. Now, granted, if you have a clear mind and push forward pretty aggressively, you can get through it. But realize what you're up against. If you are on a diet and you're constantly saying no to yourself, one, you're making yourself weaker to resisting eating unhealthy foods, but two, you're also going to start not destroying, start impairing your thoughts and decisions and other things. And that's just how the human mind works. Okay? And there's plenty of studies that have proven this over and over and over again. In one other study, people were asked to watch a humorous film and suppress their laughter. They couldn't laugh. Then to solve different different difficult problems. In another, they were instructed to write about a day in the life of an obese person without using any stereotypes. Then were told to suppress a specific thought. Don't think about a white gorilla or white bear or whatever. No matter what the tasks were, they always perform significantly worse on the second than the first. If they had resisted laughter for 10 minutes, they couldn't persist on the problems. If they had suppressed stereotypes, then they couldn't avoid thinking about a white gorilla. That's how it was. So on and so on. Every single time humans have tested this, if you are told not to do something and to focus on it, then it will break through in the next thing, even though they're completely unrelated. And it's funny because I remember one of the things that my parent or my friends would tell me, or not even just my friends, like me and my friends would both say, because we had strict parents raised sneaky kids. And I always thought growing up that that was true. And it is. It's true. But it's also this whole new added facet to it, which I'm once again just connecting in my head as I'm doing this podcast, which is fun for me, was because they were constantly telling me no, no, no to do something. I then would, in other parts of my life, just not give a crap and then disappoint them and whatever. Okay? It's interesting. They did a study. This is one of the interesting ones to me. On the whole FOMIS, the famous, I just combined famous and Nokia to FOMIS. That was good. Famous Nokia ringtone, which everybody knows. That four note sound that everybody knows. Unless you are very, very young and didn't hear a Nokia phone, but everybody that's been around that time span knows what a Nokia sounds like, okay? So they did MRI technology to analyze people's brains during exposure to the sound. Here's the fun thing. They found a universal negative emotional response to that sound. Yet, amazingly, 80 million Nokia users that had that phone had that as their ringtone. So why would a human keep a ringtone that grates on their ears and then literally sends them into an emotional chemical tailspin every time they get a phone call? Why would they do that? Why would they put themselves through that torture? Here's the reason. Because it's the default option. It didn't take any time to change it, to do it. It's just there. So how many things in our life do we have that are like that ringtone that emotionally send us in a tailspin, but we don't want to change it? But remember, here's the key thing. This whole segment is about being happy. So if we're not being happy because we just settle for a default, or we settle for a belief, or we settle for an action or a way of life that we're just used to and we don't want to change it, we need to take that into consideration and look at it. Is it worth it? Is it worth it having this damage done to our happiness because we're too, and it's not lazy. I don't want to say it's lazy. It's just how our brains are wired. If we change everything all the time, we'd be completely unstable. So this mechanism inside our mind helps protect who we are as a person and an identity. We can't just be changing constantly on rash, like, all mind-altering ways. Like, we can't do that. Right? And that's the thing. Default options are literally everywhere. Shaping our choices and our behavior in almost every single aspect of our life. So So now that you're armed with that, now that you have this opening of your mind to think about that in that way, look through your life and find what defaults are you just accepting? No matter what they do to you, what are they accepting? For example, with me, one of my defaults that was widely accepted in my family group, in my friends, in my family's friends, was not moving out at 18. I, in fact, am the only person I know besides my ex who I moved her out and paid for her apartment. She's the only person I know that in my whole entire life that moved out at 18. And for the longest time, I was thinking about not moving out. But the thing is, it was so emotionally grating, and I was learning all this stuff at this time. I realized, like, this is destroying my happiness. I need to get out. And they weren't physically abusive. They weren't emotionally abusive. They were just very, very strict, and it made me not happy. So I moved out. My parents are probably on the scale of caring about their children and caring about how they turned out, I don't think there are parents that will ever touch them. They tried to do everything as right as possible, which, you know, screwed me up. But parents screw up kids, no matter, like, my parents are perfect examples of that. They did everything pretty much perfectly to the T. They were very strict, but pretty perfect. And it's taken me a long time to actually say that, but as I've grown older, I can see that. I still don't agree with a lot of the methods they did or a lot of things that they put, like, limits on me and stuff like that. But where their heart was, nobody could touch that. But I decided to leave, and it did make me a lot happier. It made me a lot happier. But a lot of people I hear, like, oh, I hate living with my parents. This is not the one. And, like, anytime I hear somebody say I hate something, like, multiple times, or this really bothers me, and they don't take action on changing it, boom, Nokia ringtone. It's the default. You gotta live with it, right? But that's how everything is. Everything, if you look around you, marketing, stores. I forget. I think everybody, when they enter a store, mostly goes to their right. So they put all the higher end items on that. Like the Best Buy that I work at, home theater is right on the right side. Takes up the whole right side of the store. Did I say the Best Buy I work at? I worked at, sorry. I don't even remember what I said, but, that the whole entire side of the store on the right side, that's where it is. And that's where Best Buy usually puts their home theaters. Car dealerships put a lot of their higher end cars on the right side of the showroom, the lot, things like that. Yeah, it's all ease. Like they play into default. Next time you're in a store, when your hands are at your side, walk up to one of the tables. The clothes will sit almost exactly at your fingertip height. There's a lot of things in your life that you don't know. That you don't know are a certain way. And the same thing with the guitar thing that I told. I put it right there in the room. And I did that by accident. But that's what it plays into. All right? And there's things that do it, like, that are harder. There are people that, when they get drunk, they hand their phones to other people so that they don't text someone drunk. If you want, there's actually, I don't know if it still is. I know there was a thing. There was a Google email late night math problem thing that if it was like a Friday or Saturday, Sunday night, you could set it up so it would set up onto your Gmail. If you logged into your Gmail, in order to send an email, you'd have to do these complex math problems. Because if you got to the math problem and you were drunk, then you'd just be like, not going to do that, or you would fail. But it also works like, and a lot of the times when people weren't drunk, they get to the math problems and still be like, yeah, I'm not doing this. Too much work. I'll email them tomorrow. So there's both sides of it. Look at a website. Most people are going to put the sign in for their email newsletter. Or here's a good idea. If you have an offer, like a video series or like a all, like whatever your entry point is, like free, like join the newsletter or get this free ebook by, you know, putting your email address here, things like that. They're all right there. They're not below. I actually did this in my marketing part earlier in the podcast, or a couple weeks ago in the podcast, about how you want to put that before the fold where you have to scroll down, which that's the fold where you have to scroll down. That's the fold. Before the fold so that people see it when they get to your website. All for a reason. And that's the thing. There's so many studies that have showed that with every additional choice that people have to make, their physical stamina, ability to perform numerical calculations, persistence in the face of failure, and overall focus drop very, very dramatically. And these don't have to be difficult decisions. I when I first like learned all this, I would test people. I do it for fun because I am a big learn something and then take action. I just do it. So I would do this. I still do this to this day. It's called decision erosion, where you make people make decisions, and then once they've had a bunch of them, you give them something and watch how badly they suck at making a decision then. One of the most infuriating things for a female is when a male can't make a decision about where they want to eat, things like that. That's like, it's been proven multiple times that when a guy's like, no, you know, where do you want to go? And she's like, I don't know, just pick somewhere. No. Like, where do you want to go? One of the most infuriating things for females. And it's not just on an attraction level. It's on a hardwired mental level as well. Because why use that valuable decision energy that we have? Why deplete it making decisions when someone else can do it? That's why people don't like making decisions when it's a group thing, or they want help from other people, or they want to make it a group thing. They want to spread that decision energy load across other people. That's why that happens. Isn't it cool? I don't know. I think it's cool. Maybe I'm just crazy. But the questions, like I said, don't have to be difficult. Something like chocolate or vanilla. Something simple as that depletes our energy just a little further. And little decisions like that. I was trying to fight back the yawn. It beat me. But those little decisions will deteriorate just a little bit further. And if there's many of them, it will happen until we just don't have enough energy to continue with a positive habit that we're trying to adopt, a conversation, a decision, anything. It's interesting because I did this, digging, if you will. I had a friend of mine that wanted to go to the gym, and he said that it was the hardest thing you would do because he'd wake up in the morning. Clearly, this isn't me because I do not wake up in the morning for pretty much anything. I love waking up at 12, if that's the earliest, okay? If it's something I have to be up for, then I will, but I'm a night person, always have been. So you know this story isn't mine, but I had a friend who would, in fact, I go to the gym at like 2 or 3 in the morning, who would have a hard time going to the gym because he hated waking up in the morning and going to the gym. He just didn't have the energy or the mental strength to do it. So what he did is he wrote out a plan to make all these decisions less, right? So he didn't have to make the decision. So what he did is he wrote out a plan for where he would exercise in the morning, what parts of his body he would focus on. Then he would put his sneakers literally right at the foot of his bed, Actually, no, it was by the side because you would like swing off and just boom right in. And most importantly, he went to bed in his gym clothes. Clothes were clean, obviously. But what happened is he had essentially decreased the activation energy enough so that when he woke up in the morning, all he had to do is roll out of bed, slip his feet into his shoes, which his feet already had socks on, by the way. Could not do that. Would drive me up the wall. I have one rule, and when it like comes to bed, well, actually, I have two. But one of them is, do I? Nope. I will go literally up the wall with people wearing socks in my bed. Oh my God. I had a girlfriend that she got really cold and she wanted to wear socks in bed. And that's something I will never, nope. Socks are like not my thing to put in bed. They're disgusting now. But yeah, he would have his socks on, drives me up the wall, and just slip his, he'd wake up, slip his feet into the shoes. He already knew where he was working out, how long, what muscles, all that stuff like that. Okay. So all those decisions that were really hard for him in his groggy morning state were all decided for him. He didn't have to do it. Didn't have to use his mind. And it worked. Eliminated all those choices and reduced the activation energy, which when you first wake up, you really don't have that much of usually. And it just made going to the gym a default thing to him. And once he started, it got to the point where he didn't have to wear his gym clothes to the bed. It was just automatic because that's how it was. But yeah, I understand the whole like not waking up. Like with me, when I did have to wake up in the mornings, there was a period of time where I had to, I literally had a rule that I wouldn't talk. Like I would get in cars with people for the first time because they'd be driving me, and I wouldn't talk, and people would try to talk to me, and my ex would have to be like, he doesn't talk in the morning. I wouldn't. I do not. I would not, because I had a thing where, like, if I get up early, like in the morning, I get violently sick. I literally get almost every single flu symptom there is. Like, I can get nauseous. I get horrible headaches. Yeah, it's bad. Sweats, shaky, not good. But I wouldn't talk. That's how I would help. I wouldn't eat anything for a couple hours, and I wouldn't talk for at least half an hour to an hour. Just nothing would come out of me. Something had to come. It was very short and it was usually very, very cold and very, very rough. Just like me rattling something off because I had to and I wasn't happy about it. But in order for me to get through the day or get through that morning part, that's what I had to do. And same thing with this guy or my friend. I had to had this way of going to the gym and it worked for him. So that's what it is. We're bundles of habit. Kind of a recap here. We're bundles of habits. That's what we are. We just need to decide which ones we want to habitize. I am so into habits that there are times, and I know there's other people that do this. I will drive somewhere that I drive often on complete autopilot. And I haven't gotten any accidents, but I will literally get in my car, start driving, and get to where I'm going and be like, huh, I don't even know how I got here. And I really couldn't tell you much about what happened on that ride. It's just something that just happened. I just got there and that was it. We're creatures of habit. We are. It's been said for hundreds, if not thousands of years, that humans are creatures of habit. So ingrain habits that are going to make you happy. If you are worried about your health, find habits that make you healthy, because that will make you happy. But that's the thing, when we're making habits, we need to put the time and the persistence in, because like I said, once again, motivation will not help. Motivation. How do I make this sound clever? Motivation will always die at the feet of habit. It will never get to habit. Motivation will never last the 3 weeks or more to get to habit. It won't. Motivation is fleeting. It's something that is part of that part of our mind is that as we use it up, it gets less and less and less. There's many times where I wanted to get back into working like 12 or 15 hours a day. Had it planned out, gonna do it, gonna do it, gonna do it. Wasn't until that I really needed to get back into it and I started doing it. And then 3 weeks went by or 4 weeks and I was like, oh, this is just normal. It's just normal for me to work this much now. Just like when I used to play video games excessively, sorry. It was just a thing. It's just something I did. And trust me, playing video games is more fun than working. Well, most of the time. I don't know. Me right now would kind of disagree with that. But that's how it is. Working to me is just my habit now. It's what I do. And it's weird because once you get a habit, like there's some days like I'll take off and I'll be like, oh my God, I gotta get back to work. There's nights where like I didn't work all day and like on my day off because I do have days off because I'm, or day off usually. Because I do believe in taking time and, not pushing yourself to death. But there's days where like I'll have the day off and I'll be sitting at home doing, doing housework and just like watching TV or playing, no, I don't play video games anymore, watching TV, reading, things like that. And I'll get to like 12 o'clock and I'll go nuts. 12 o'clock at night and I'll be like, oh my God, I gotta go to work. And there's times where I've literally like went to work at 12 o'clock for a couple hours just to feel better. Because that's what happens. When you have a habit like that, you're going to get to the point where it's just the default. And making money or making yourself happy or dieting or once those are habits and they just feel right, that's what you want. That's how you get happiness through habits. That is it, guys, for tonight. 37 minutes, one of my shorter, 38 minutes, one of my shorter podcasts of recently. Not too much shorter, but not 40 or 48 or 50 minutes, but there we go. Anyhow, guys, that is it for me tonight. Once again, my name is Connor Gilson, and I'll be talking to you guys later. Have a good night.